Amen. You guys can take a seat. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors at Revision. I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. So when I was a senior in college, I got really sick. I spent a few days just throwing up absolutely everything that I ate, and I'd have to curl up in the fetal position for about 10 minutes at a time because I couldn't move. I just figured it was a really bad flu. So my plan was to wait it out and just get better. And then Jenny came into town to visit me, and she made me go to urgent care, which I don't think she knew at the time was a preview of the rest of her life, because I still only go to the doctor or the dentist or any medical professional if she schedules an appointment and forces me to go. Hashtag marriage. But I went in and I told the guy about my symptoms, and he listened to me with a stethoscope, and he prescribed me some pills that he thought would help me get better, and I left feeling kind of hopeful that that might work. And then the next day was probably the sickest day of my life. I couldn't barely move at all. I just laid on a couch, and every time I took the pills, I hurled them right back up, and I whined a lot because I was in pain and I am not tough. And I was still gonna wait it out because I thought maybe eventually one of these pills will just stay down and then I'll get better and it'll be fine. And Jenny thought that that was a really dumb plan and I should go right back to the doctor. I'd like to think that's because she was so madly in love with me she couldn't bear the thought of losing me or seeing me in pain. It might have been because she was sick of hearing me whine. I don't know. Don't ask her, please. I'm happy not knowing. Just like, I don't know, but I do know who wins whenever we have a disagreement. So there I was back at the doctor that I had just seen, and I told him, it wasn't working. Your stupid pills are making me puke. I don't know what to do. And he got this quizzical look on his face, and he poked me in the side, and I said, ah! And he laughed. He said, it's appendicitis. Your appendix is about to blow up. So I'm going to call the emergency room and you should go straight there. And we left and I was feeling relieved that I had a diagnosis and an excuse to not go to class for a couple weeks. But as Jenny was driving me to the ER and I was laying in the back of this car, I started thinking, why did he not diagnose this yesterday? I'd understand if the test for appendicitis is really expensive or complicated. Like, you got to shove a tube down my throat and look around with a camera. But a finger poke is not an expensive medical procedure. It's also not time intensive. There's no way he was walking through that day like, wow, there's so many people in the emergency room. I don't think I have time for the poke today. I've poked people on accident. It's very fast. Just do it. And by the time I got to the hospital, I was pretty grumpy at that guy. But in the end, I lived. Spoiler alert, in case you were wondering, here I am, despite his best efforts and his diagnostic failures. And I'd like to kind of still be bitter about the whole ordeal, but it's difficult to have any lingering grumpiness when things work out in the end. The reality of our shattered world, though, is that sometimes people fail us in ways that have consequences that last a whole lot longer than mine did. In ways that cut pretty deep, and the pain stays with us and the bitterness lingers. We've all been failed by someone. Or worse, we've been intentionally hurt. People have lied to us or lied about us. They've forgotten us or made us feel foolish. They've misrepresented us or betrayed us. Like, we've all got stories and scars from our past about something somebody did that sucked the life right out of us. Last week, we kicked off this brand new series called How to Hug a Vampire, Loving the People Who Suck the Life Out of Us. And we talked about how God actually wants us to love all the difficult, impossible, annoying, painful, blood-sucking, life-sucking vampires in our lives. And that's a tall task. It's not a simple thing to do because they're people we'd like to avoid. And the truth is, for all of us, the deadest, driest parts of our souls, the parts inside of us that are all shriveled up because the life has been sucked out of them, all go back to hurt, to something somebody did that wounded us. And when we think about that somebody, that vampire from our past or from our present, we don't feel love. We feel anger and sometimes even hatred. It's easy when things have gone wrong to feel like that. It's so easy to get bitter. It's so easy to let our hearts grow cold. It's easy to hold a grudge. And sometimes it's fun to hold a grudge. Can we just be real with each other for a minute and admit that holding a grudge is like one of life's guilty pleasures? That sometimes we sit around thinking about that perfect line, that great comeback, that mic drop moment, and we dream about the day when, like, everyone's gathered around and we get our chance and we say that thing to them and everyone starts cheering because the whole world can now see what a blood-sucking vampire they are, and they walk away with their heads hung low and we're like, yeah. It's fun. I know it's fun because y'all got big dumb grins on your faces while I talk about it. We all do this, right? But I'm forced to wonder, if it really went down, like if conditions were perfect and you got the chance to say those words that you've been thinking about saying for so long, would it really be as satisfying as you've hoped it would be? I'm not sure. I think when vampires in our world attack, when we've been wronged and victimized and left to pick up the pieces, we want revenge, payback, justice. And our natural human response in an effort to get those things is to hold grudges and get bitter. But I've been around long enough at this point to doubt whether that actually works. I think if grudges actually worked, you wouldn't still be holding them. I think if bitterness really worked, you wouldn't still be bitter. Like the way that we're doing it, the way of our world, the way of our culture simply isn't working. And so there's got to be a different way forward. There's got to be a better way to deal with hurt and pain in our lives than just being really mad about it, because that's not moving us out of the place of brokenness where we are to any place that's better. How in the world do we move forward? Like for our own sake, so that we're not holding on to pain that's destroying our lives anymore, and for their sake, if God really does think it's possible for us to love and embrace them even after what they've done. What do we do? Well, God actually has a term, he has a word for this alternate response to the vampires our lives have been unfortunate enough to crash into. And as soon as we hear it, there's something inside all of us that tenses up just a little bit. Because when we hear the word forgiveness, the objections start popping up. We think, well, I like forgiveness as an idea. I like that God forgives. I want to be forgiven when I mess up. And I usually am a forgiving person. It's just this story, this one. You don't know my story. You don't understand my vampire. You don't get what actually happened to me and why. It's just, it's non-negotiable. Because isn't forgiveness just pretending that it's okay, that it isn't a big deal? I can't pretend that it really is a big deal for me. And anyways, how could I forgive when they aren't sorry? They've done absolutely nothing to deserve forgiveness. In fact, they're still sucking the life out of me. And why should I? Why do I need to forgive when I feel so justified? It feels so right to hold this grudge. No, it can't happen for me. Not with this one. Not this time. I know forgiveness is difficult to think about, much less put into practice when we've been hurt. It's a really great concept right up to the point where we have something to forgive, and then it's the last thing in the world that we want to do. And something inside of you might want to tune me out today as I talk about this, and I want to invite you just to set that aside for a few minutes and try and be open to what God has to say to you, because Jesus could not be more clear about this. He thinks that forgiveness is the appropriate response to hurt. And it's something that he wants for you just as much as he wants it from you. Blood-sucking, life-sucking vampires are never going to stop being a reality in your life, because our world is all jacked up and people are broken. And as crazy as this sounds, like I'm convinced, ironically enough, that loving the people who suck the life out of you is the only way you're going to find yourself filled back up with life. The only way you're going to be able to move through a shattered world feeling full and free and pursuing the future God has for you. I think it's the best way to live fully human and fully alive in the middle of a space where people regularly do things that dehumanize us. So how do we do it? What does that look like? And is it possible to forgive in a way that doesn't minimize the wrong that was done, that doesn't just paper over the cracks, and that doesn't force us to abandon justice and truth? The Apostle Paul had some thoughts about that, and he wrote them down in his letter to the church in Rome. So if you have a Bible or a Bible with you this morning, you can crack it open to the book of Romans chapter 12. If you don't have a Bible, you can follow along with the words on the screen or in the Revision app. And if you need a Bible, we have a whole bunch of them at the Next Steps table. We love it when they disappear. Please take whatever you need today. But Paul is a guy, when it comes to talking about vampires and how to treat them, who I think is worth listening to. He was arrested and imprisoned unfairly multiple times. He was beaten and left for dead multiple times. He was lied to and lied about multiple times, and eventually he got killed. A bunch of scholars think it happened in the Colosseum, that he got thrown into the games to be eaten by a wild animal or struck down by a gladiator, all for the audacity of telling people about the love of Jesus. And so if anyone who ever lived other than Jesus knows something about people who suck the life out of you, it's Paul. And what he does in Romans 12 is really fascinating. He casts this vision for the church, for what it looks like to be a community in the way that God intended for us to be a community. And he admits right off the bat, it's hard. Relationships are difficult. Anytime we exist in a place where our lives are crashing into the lives of other people, we're gonna get hurt because people are gonna people. It just is. They're vampires. And what we're gonna wanna do in that moment is reject them or judge them or look down on them or run away from them. But Paul says, hey, time out. I got this whole other response that you might wanna try when, not if, when you get hurt. And this is what he writes in Romans chapter 12, verse 17. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. Time out, Paul. Don't repay anyone for evil. That's exactly what I want to do when I experience evil. Like punch, counterpunch. Yesterday, my kid kicked me in the shin. I kicked him right back. I didn't feel bad about it at all. I still don't. I feel bad about a lot of things, not that one. That's just the natural response. When someone strikes, we want to strike back. If someone sucks the life out of me, I'm sucking the life right back out of them. Because when we get hurt, it creates this reality in our lives that something's missing that we had before. Something's been taken from us, or something is broken. And when something's missing and something's broken in our lives, we get angry about that. We get frustrated about it, and we want revenge. We want justice, and we're angry. And what I love about the way Paul kicks off his thoughts on forgiveness is that he tells us it's okay for us to be angry. You guys, anger is an appropriate response to sin. God is angry about sin. God hates evil. He couldn't possibly be more emphatic about that. And what Paul does here, it's almost easy to miss because it seems subtle, but he's choosing his words carefully. Notice what he does not say. He doesn't tell us, don't repay that little tiny insignificant thing you should just get over. Don't repay that glass of spilled milk that you've been crying over with evil. He says, do not repay evil with evil. He names it exactly what it is. He calls it evil. It is not less than that. God will not treat it as less than that, which for us should be both a relief and a warning. It's a relief because we know that the God of the universe isn't minimizing our pain. And isn't asking us to pretend everything's okay when something's broken. That's not what he's doing. God cares a whole awful lot about the times when someone has sucked the life out of you. Paul names it, God names it evil. And it's important for us to call it what it is, because if we make it less than that, if we say out loud that it's okay when deep down inside we know that it isn't, then whatever forgiveness might happen on the back end of that is gonna be fake. And so it's important to call it evil. God calls it evil. And we know that he's gonna treat it like that. But at the same time, Paul's telling us, okay, that's a relief. God does care and God does know how bad it hurt. But also you need to be careful. And we know this. I know it, you know it. We've all lived it. Whenever something happens where we want justice and revenge, our souls get thrown into a really dangerous position. We're living on the edge of a knife. Because our desire for vengeance can create this space inside our souls where the evil that was done to us opens up a door for evil to be done in us and through us. We come to the point where we're just so frustrated that we're thinking about it and we're dwelling on it. And even if we don't do it, even if we just wallow in our bitterness for a long time, that does something inside of our hearts. It causes them to grow cold and hard, and it causes us to turn inward. Like the longer we focus on our bitterness, the more self-pitying and self-centered we become. And if we're not careful, the destructive action of that other person will keep on hurting us until it wrecks us completely. I think Tolkien illustrated that really well in The Lord of the Rings. The Dark Lord Sauron forged this great, terrible ring of power. But the paradox of that ring was that if you used it, even against him, in the name of justice and goodness, your heart would become so corrupted in the process, you'd be just like the Dark Lord. You guys, we cannot use the same tactics of the blood-sucking, life-sucking vampires around us without becoming them. Paul's warning us here that if we do that, we will lose even more of ourselves than they already stole. So just do not repay evil with evil. And that's an incredibly difficult concept when it comes to our own pain. But if we're honest, it's kind of an encouraging concept when it comes to the pain we've caused. We said last week the first step towards hugging a vampire is admitting that we can be vampires ourselves. And when you think about the things that you've done to other people, the things that you've stolen and broken in their lives, it's nice to think that God's asking them not to take revenge on you. At least it is for me. I don't know, maybe you guys are perfect, but it's comforting. Have any of you ever accidentally killed your neighbor's pet? When I was 16 and I first got my license, the little kids who lived next door had this bunny. And I'm just kidding, I never ran over anybody's bunny. That'd be so bad. I'd feel terrible. I did forget to feed my friend's fish once while he studied abroad for a semester. It did not go good for the fish, but he got back and he wasn't that mad at me. I think at that point, we were just glad he hadn't trusted me to feed his horse, because you can't flush that down a toilet. It's a whole different ball game. But anyways, Paul says, don't repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is good. And then in verse 18, he continues. He said, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. That's a really profound statement. I think one of the major issues a lot of us have with forgiveness is that sometimes the people who hurt us won't say that they're sorry, or they won't mean it if they do. And what do we do with that? How are we supposed to forgive unrepentant people? How can we hug vampires who are still trying to suck the life out of us? And Paul kicks this verse off by admitting that sometimes that's just not possible. He uses two prepositions. He double qualifies the statement, like, if it's even possible, as far as you're concerned. And what he means is there are some vampires who just don't want to be hugged. But at the same time, I think he's issuing us a challenge. Because when we hear that word, like, as far as it depends on you, I think our natural response is to self-righteously say, well, I am trying to live at peace. It's her that's got the problem. It's him that needs to say sorry. It's not my thing. I'm doing it right. I just got to wait for them. And as soon as that vampire does what they need to do, then I can live at peace. And what Paul is saying when he says, as far as it depends on you, is that you have a choice that exists completely independent of the other person. Like, everyone who hurts you isn't always going to say sorry or be sorry. If you're waiting on that, you're going to wait a long time. Like, if you're carrying bitterness and rage and resentment deep down in your soul until you get an apology, you will carry those to your grave. What Paul is saying here is you don't have to wait on them to fix the thing that's broken in you. You don't have to carry your brokenness around with you everywhere you go like it's a part of your identity. You can just release it. You don't have to wait for them to be sorry, to let go of your ill will and your anger and find peace in your soul. You can choose right now to be set free from all of that. You can choose to live at peace. And it's so cool that Paul talks about peace here. He's illustrating this concept. And peace in the Bible is kind of a bigger term and a bigger concept than we're used to thinking of when we hear the word peace in English. Because for us, like in my house, peace is just a time when people aren't fighting. We call it peace when we're in a brief period of respite between two twin five-year-olds trying to murder each other. That's peace. Like, if we go 10 minutes without someone yelling, ow, he bit me, peace. And it is peaceful, but Paul's talking about this different thing. In the Bible, peace refers back to this Hebrew word, this concept called shalom. Can everybody say shalom with me? Shalom. Shalom is more than just not fighting. It's holistic, all-encompassing peace. And here's what's awesome about the way Paul's using it here. Okay, when somebody hurts us, when somebody wrongs us, there's something missing that we had before. They've taken something from us, or there's something broken that was full before. Something's missing and something's broken. Well, the best understanding, the best way that we can define this holistic concept of shalom in the Bible is this: shalom means nothing is missing and nothing is broken. Nothing missing, nothing broken. Paul's saying you don't have to hold on to what was done. You don't have to stay broken until somebody else fixes it. Because of what Jesus has done for you, because of who Jesus says you are, you can decide to forgive, to release it, to let shalom, nothing missing, nothing broken, reign in your heart as the chains which bind you to the wounds of your past are broken. And there are a couple of key ideas I want us to see about forgiveness this morning. This is the first one. Forgiveness is a pathway to fullness. We're broken, we're empty, we're missing something that's been taken from us. Bitterness isn't going to get that back. Grudges aren't going to get that back. Anger isn't going to get that back. Forgiveness is the pathway to fullness, to being in a spot where we can say nothing is missing and nothing is broken. That's what Paul's trying to tell us. And then in verse 19, he writes, "Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge. I will repay,' says the Lord." And Paul's quoting God here from the book of Deuteronomy. And to be honest, I'm really glad he does. I kind of need that reminder at this point in the passage, because I can wrap my mind around not like clinging to some sort of rage that eats me alive on the inside for my own sake. And I can even wrap my mind around like not repaying somebody evil for evil, because I don't want to be an evil person. And I can wrap my mind around kind of releasing stuff even if somebody isn't sorry, just because I don't want to hold on to it anymore. But at this point, something in the back of my mind, and if you're anything like me, maybe you're wondering it too, is saying like, yeah, but if I do that, aren't they just kind of getting away with it? Like, I can do all that stuff for me, for my own sake, but doesn't that mean they're just getting off scot-free? That doesn't seem fair that somebody can hurt me and have no consequences. I kind of want justice. I have a desire that lives inside of me for justice, and I think we all do. The truth is that the desire for justice is hardwired into us as human beings who are created in the image of a just God. And God is just, but that's what Paul's trying to tell us in this passage. He's trying to say, God is just, so we can forgive, because justice isn't our problem, it's his. Which is so cool, because I think it's easy when bad things happen to us to want to get justice on our own. To want to sit in that judgment seat, but it's not our seat, it's God's seat. And when we try to do his job, it doesn't work out very well for us or for the people around us. I don't think it's possible, you guys, to truly forgive somebody if we're convinced deep down that we have to make sure in the end that justice is served. In the end, we can only really release our bitterness in a way that sets us free and sets other people free if we believe in a God of perfect justice. There's a Croatian theologian named Miroslav Volf. He's a brilliant guy. He lost most of his family, saw them murdered in the Serbian genocide. And he writes about this idea that God is a just God. And he said, people tell him all the time that if you believe in a God of justice, a God of judgment and a God of wrath, then eventually what will happen is your soul will turn to a place where you become judgmental and wrathful yourself. And Wolf says, I doubt that any of the people who tell me that have ever actually lost something at the hands of another person. Because when somebody takes something precious from you, like a parent or a child, the only way to not let hate become a prison that eats away at your soul until there's almost nothing left of who you were and who you want to be is to believe that there is a God who is just, who is in charge. Because once you believe that, it's not your problem anymore. You can release it and you can have compassion even on the people who hurt you, just like God had compassion on you. So we can forgive. Because we know this is not about papering over the cracks. It's not God telling us to pretend there's no hole in our life and hopefully no one sees it when really there is. That's not what forgiveness is about. It's not about covering up our pain. One time when I was in college, I was playing darts and I was feeling lazy, so I got handed the darts. And I wasn't a good dart player when I was standing up, but I just decided I was going to throw them from the couch. And predictably, my first dart missed really badly. Unpredictably, it went straight through the wall. I don't know if you guys could tell from the last 20 minutes of looking at me, but I do not have the physique of somebody who can throw a plastic tip dart through drywall. That's not a thing. So we were all pretty curious as to what happened to that dart. We went to the hole and it had gone through the wallpaper and then through a hole in the drywall. It's like a 1 in a million shot. Until we started peeling back the wallpaper and realized it was a 1 in 2 shot. There was almost no way I could have missed that hole. It was a 2 by 4 foot crater that someone had just wallpapered over in a frat house, which is just, it was an amazing wallpapering job. But like, that's not forgiveness. It's not just like, oh, let's put some wallpaper over this crater that's living inside of me and then hopefully no one will expose it. That's not what it's about. God is a just God who's really dealing with the real pain in our lives. It's not about pretending it's fine. It's trusting that God is just so that we can experience the fullness and the freedom and the future that he has for us. And Paul finishes his thoughts on this by quoting Psalm 25. He says, "On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head." He said, your act of love in response to an act of blood sucking is such a radical thing. It might just lead an unrepentant person to turn their life around. And then he closes with this powerful warning and beautiful vision all wrapped into one. He says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. We've all been wounded before. We've all got scars. And it is easy to let our pain become our prison. It's easy to let our past rob our future because we've allowed it to define our present. It's easy to slap the label victim across our forehead and wear it around with us everywhere we go. But if we do that, as we do that, when we do that, Paul warns us that evil can completely overcome us. We can be owned by it. It can lock us up and change what we see in the mirror and steal the lives we were created for. But the good news of Jesus, this message that the God of the universe died on a tree and then rose again, defeating death from the inside so that we could be forgiven and set free, changes everything. It means we don't have to carry that pain, not for one more minute. We don't have to be defined for a second by what we've done or what's been done to us. We can be defined by what he did for us. And because we're forgiven, we can forgive. And when we do that, we're liberated. This is the second big thing I want us to understand about forgiveness this morning. Forgiveness is the pathway to freedom. Pain is prison. Forgiveness is the pathway to freedom and fullness. And when we're full and we're free, when nothing is missing and nothing is broken because of the healing of God, when we find our identity in the love of God, then we can be a force that beats back the darkness around us, that overcomes the evil that's cutting off our vampires from the lives and the future and the love God has for them. I love the word Paul uses and the imagery behind it when he says, overcome evil with good. That word overcome here is a military term. What it means is conquer, devastate, overpower. It means relentlessly attack. Paul's saying, fight with grace and love and forgiveness because they absorb evil and they leak good. They are the weapons that can beat back the brokenness of a shattered world. And I think way too often when it comes to having the life sucked out of us, when it comes to dealing with vampires, our minds go on the defensive. We think, how can I avoid? How can I run away? How can I protect myself? And God is inviting us to go on the offense. You guys, forgiveness is the battle strategy God invented way back in Genesis 3. To bring hope and healing back to humanity broken and bound by sin. Forgiveness is the weapon of relentless attack that can overcome evil, that can bring light to the darkness our vampires have been living in and bring fullness and freedom to us along the way. So I'm going to challenge you this morning to forgive, and I know that's not an easy thing. I want you to know that I'm not trying to make light of what happened to you. I'm not trying to minimize your pain in any way, shape, or form. And I understand that this is difficult. I want to call it just what Paul called it. It's evil. What happened to you is evil. The things that have caused bitterness to live and fester inside your soul were evil. And I'm not going to pretend that letting them go and forgiving is going to be easy, because forgiveness can't happen where suffering hasn't happened. Forgiveness only comes out of a place where you've been hurt. There is no forgiveness without suffering, which means it's always difficult. But Jesus suffered on your behalf while you were a messed up sinner. And I think that means you can forgive messed up sinners too. And I promised over the course of this series that I'd get really practical with how to do that. That I'd give you some pragmatic steps for how to hug your vampire. And I'll close with that really quickly. Forgiveness is a journey to fullness and freedom. And I want to invite you to go on a forgiveness journey this week. And there are three steps to it. I call them the three C's of forgiveness. Okay, forgiveness happens in our lives when something has been taken or something has been broken. There's something missing or broken in our lives. And the Bible tells us all over the place, again and again and again, that the person who took that or broke that owes us something. They owe us back what was stolen. They owe us a fix for the brokenness. There's a debt that they've incurred. And forgiveness really simply looks like canceling that debt. And so my challenge to you this week as you undergo the 3C pathway of forgiveness toward fullness and freedom is to do these three things. Number one, call your vampires by name. Be real honest with yourself. Don't just do the thing where you're like, well, Jesus said to forgive, so I'm just gonna forgive. And then you really haven't, because you really haven't thought about it. Take some time and write down the names of the people who you got bitterness living in your heart towards. Call them by name. And number two, calculate what they're owed. Like if shalom, if nothing missing, nothing broken is not your reality because something's missing and something's broken, name what is missing and what is broken. This is a really important step. I think this is one a lot of people skip because as Christians, we know we're supposed to forgive and we want to jump right to the end product. But we don't take time to specifically identify what's causing brokenness in us. And general forgiveness sometimes ends up being fake forgiveness. It doesn't tend to heal specific wounds. And so what you need to do is calculate what you're owed. And that may be a number. If your cousin Patty stole $9 from you when you were 11, that's an easy one. She owes you $9 plus interest because you were probably going to buy a stock with that and not candy. So like Patty owes you $9. That's easy. Sometimes that calculation isn't a number. There are people sitting in this room who've had things taken from us, like time and affection and relationship that we wouldn't dare put a value on, that we wouldn't sell for $1 million and we can't buy back. But just write down, calculate it. This is what was taken from me. This is what it would take to fix the brokenness. And then step three, cancel the debt. Cancel it. Decide that your vampires owe you nothing. Do it in your heart. Do it in your head. Write it on a piece of paper and burn it. Whatever works, don't burn it. Don't burn down your house. But whatever works for you, just you do you. But release it. Say like, hey, this is what was taken from me. I can't live at peace because something's missing. I'm squaring off the books. It's not missing anymore. Nobody owes me that. And then your soul can be set free. You don't have to be imprisoned by bitterness anymore. Just forgive it and cancel the debt. And I know that's difficult to even think about in some of the times and some of the places we've been hurt. I know we don't want to do that for some of the vampires in our lives. We have reasons. Because I think if we don't, our souls will keep eating away at themselves while we remain trapped in a prison of our bitterness. Our bitterness that is not working, or we wouldn't still be bitter. Like the pathway of bitterness, it's not working for us, it's not working for our culture, it's not working for our world. We need to apply some new habits to our old frustrations. And if forgiveness is our new habit, I really believe we'll experience life in it like we've never experienced before. The love of God will fill us up to the point where it overflows and it sets free some of the vampires in our world who are longing to experience that love. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you for forgiveness. Thanks for setting us free. We're coming to you as humans who are all messed up, who've made tons of mistakes, who don't deserve forgiveness or freedom or life, and yet you've given it to us anyway. Would you just do something in our hearts that allows us to walk out the doors of this place into a world that's just shattered and full of pain, full of brokenness, full of blackness, and full of darkness, and extend forgiveness to the people who've hurt us the same way we received it? Would you help us find freedom and find fullness and find shalom? Move from a space of brokenness to a space where nothing's missing and nothing's broken because we've given it up. And we've treated the people around us the way that you treated us. Would you just fill us with your love and let us leak that love all over the broken people in our world? We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.